Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the host of the show, one of the smartest, sharpest, funniest, and handsomest men I know, the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, Guy Branum!
Oh, hey there, I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. And this week, we are live from Max FunCon. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winna Mitchell.
Journalist Margaret Wappler, actually.
We did this wrong.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. And our guest panelist this week, you know him from his now deceased podcast, Wham Bam Pow, a very talented stand-up comedian, Mr. Ricky Carmona.
What's poppin', people? What they do? What they do? What they do? What they do?
You guys, a live Pop Rocket. We've been talking about this for so long. How do you feel about it?
I have special feelings inside right now. Feel warm inside.
Very warm.
I'm kind of hurt though that I tried to get everyone in a truth or dare like prayer huddle before we got on.
Yes.
And nobody would do it. So
we all had our own stuff going on. Winter, what are your primary concerns with doing a live Pop Rocket?
Well, I'm going to be drunk. So as long as you're all with me.
But no, Winter,
no
I'm asking what will be different about this recording of Pop Rocket.
Oh! Looking at me. So everybody don't look at me. I want no eye contact.
You guys are allowed to look at whatever you want. Thank you so much for coming. A round of applause for yourselves. And you guys, because this is a very special occasion, we have a very special guest. She is a feminist icon. She is one of the badass human beings of indie rock. I am told that is not a thing that I know about. Margaret, introduce her better.
We have the lead singer of Sleater-Kinney, Corin Tucker. Thank you.
Corin, welcome to Pop Rocket. What are your fears?
I think that maybe you guys might watch more TV than I do.
Oh, boy.
Probably.
That's understandable.
It's going to go great.
Corin, just so we can get to know you, I mean, I'm sure most people here know a lot about you. I don't. I thought that we should all ask moderately invasive questions about your pop culture tastes, okay?
Fair enough.
Do you consent to that?
I consent.
Sweet. All right, my question. Corin Tucker, what is the piece of pop culture that always makes you cry?
I'm going to say during most Patti Smith albums, it's usually like the sixth song, like I'll just find myself just like crying.
Is there anything that makes you cry that I can relate to and know about?
Oh, gosh.
So like a Miley Cyrus
or you can just tell me what your favorite Broadway musical is. What's your favorite Broadway musical?
Well, it wasn't a musical, but I just did see Fun Home.
Oh, why is Fun Home not a musical? Fun Home is a musical.
It is a musical, I guess. Yes. It's not a traditional musical, but it's like a new, you know.
It always makes
piece.
Me cry.
Oh yeah, that was
Highway 80 that connects Christopher Street to Castro. Hello,
it's amazing.
Oh. Margaret, ask a question.
Because. So bossy. Because you're such an amazing vocalist, I really want to know who you sang along with in the shower. Like when you were a kid and you were getting your chops in order, who did you sing along with?
Probably Cyndi Lauper.
She is
an incredible singer.
She really is.
Have you seen Kinky Boots?
I haven't.
She wrote Kinky Boots.
I know.
You watch it and you're just thinking it's an adaptation of that movie. And then you get to the like sad girl song about how the boy doesn't love her. And you're like, Cyndi Lauper wrote this musical. Like, it's good.
That's amazing.
My question is really more for myself than it is for you. Bennifer version 1 or Bennifer version 2?
Oh, I think version 1. Right?
Right answer.
Version 2 makes me sad.
We're going to get along.
Fuck Jennifer Garner. Ricky, do you have a question for
Corey? I do. I have two questions. First question, why are you so dope? what's going to age worse? Shots about to be fired.
Ooh.
Straight out of Compton or Empire?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. Ooh. Damn.
Damn.
I'm going to have to say Empire.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Empire stopped being relevant its second season.
Yeah. Like, right away.
It's
right
away.
Oh, I got so disappointed.
They should be ashamed of themselves.
All right. Corin, you may be unfamiliar with the way that we work. Oh, first, coming up on this week's show, notes on camp. We're going to talk about summer camp, and we're going to talk about campy camp. plus, pop culture advice for all of you. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news and events have caught our attention this week. Corin Tucker, what are you all about this week? I have to ask the question formally. You can't just jump in there, even though I told you to jump in there. Jump in there, but I will reproach you, but jump in there.
So I am all about this book, Modern Lovers, by Emma Straw. It's a super fun read so far, but it's about, so this is why I relate to it so much. It's about a band. Oh. They were a band like 20 years ago coming out of Oberlin. And they moved to Brooklyn. And one of the members went on to become super famous. Mm. She also died.
Ooh.
But the others, two of whom are man and woman, they have a son who's in high school, and then another woman who is in the band is a lesbian, and she has a daughter with her partner, and their daughter is about to go to college. So their children are now coming of age, and the people in the story are nearing 50, and they're losing their shit.
It seems like being in a successful band is a way of life that a lot of people make pop culture about, but a lot of people haven't lived. Like, this is clearly a good representation of what the life you lived is like. Can you think of any others?
I don't think this is a representation of the life that I've lived, but these people were in a band for a while, and the band broke up.
Uh-huh.
But it still ties them together in a lot of ways. So I guess that's something I relate to a lot. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
I read an excerpt where there's this great line about New York and how every single building has like 7 layers of history. Yes. And the longer you've been there, the more you can actually unwrap that history, and that gives you some cred.
Well, the only way to say you're a true New Yorker is if you can go back 3 layers.
Yeah.
And you can say like, oh, well, that place used to be a bodega. And then before that, it was a Cuban place. And before that, it was a Mexican restaurant.
So. Right. That's legit. I think 3 layers. That's 3 a good layers. Rule.
Yeah.
And it's becoming that in Portland, too, now. So.
There are like 2.5 layers in Portland.
Strippers, shop, then donut shop, then craft beer emporium.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Carmona, what are you all about this week?
I am all about, surprise, surprise, I've been listening to this album that's, can I say, fuck?
Yes.
This album, can I say album?
Yes.
this guy called Catronata.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Oh,
Catronata. Listen to the album 99.9%. Listen to the song One Too Many, which is, he just is able to mix this great blend of hip-hop and house music. I'm from Chicago, so I love house music. And it's just like this grown folks sounding beat that makes you want to dance and hump a lot. It's so great.
Yeah.
He's got a song called One Too Many. That's great. There's another song called Together that I use for my alarm when I wake up in the morning just so I can have a fucking smile on my face. Oh, it's so good. I dance by myself. I have solo dance parties. And this is the current solo dance party album that I am enjoying. 99.9% by Kate Renata.
What is the poppiest, candiest track? What is the track that I should use to try to enter?
One Too Many and Together are pretty great.
You'll love One Too Many.
Because there's, right. I played the album for a couple of my friends, and they're like, oh, are we getting on our druggy shit right now? And it's like, relax.
What?
Yeah. Just because something is electronic doesn't immediately make it druggy or like, ooh, man, why come we're not doing Molly right now? Calm down.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, why aren't we doing Molly?
There definitely isn't Molly in this drink I'm having right now.
Winter Mitchell, what are you all about?
Oh, God. Well, you know, this week has been nothing short of a shit show politically. Delete your account. I mean,
delete your account, everybody.
Because In 2016, that's the only way you're going to tell somebody to shut the fuck up is just delete your account. I just found that, you know, the campaign, we don't really talk about politics that much on Pop Rock. It's so much that I missed the political episode. But I really feel like, you know, with Hillary, and I don't know who I'm voting for, so I'm not taking any sides, but if you look at the campaign that Trump has been running, it's absolutely ridiculous. He's a kumquat. He is a pumpkin head. And Hillary has been trying to be like very terracotta tiny hands.
Yes, that's what I wanted you to say.
Yeah, terracotta tiny hands. He's been trying to sort of take this position. She's been taking this position of being sort of like the better person and fighting fire with water. And she finally fought it with fire. I mean, deleting your account, I don't know if anybody, who here has ever heard that before Hillary Clinton tweeted it?
Yeah.
All right.
You guys, great. This is a non-visual medium, so if you want to say yes, clap. Okay? Don't raise your hands.
So she, you know, delete your account means just kill yourself. Like, go, like, you know, and you can't say kill yourself anymore because we know why. So when she said that...
Kill your digital self.
Kill your digital self. When she said that, I was just so impressed by it that I looked at that tweet for 15 minutes.
What was... There were two things that were truly lovely about it. One of them was making clear that the campaign she ran against Bernie was going to be different from the campaign she ran 100%. Against Trump. But the more important and like interesting one is that Trump is bringing a different kind of discourse, a newer and kind of more relevant kind of discourse that sort of like is in the world of reality TV and the way that media cycles work now. And there was just a clear articulation from her campaign that she knows how to play that game.
She knows how to play that game. And you know, the other thing too is like, you guys, when like Nixon and Kennedy were running, nobody really ever, they listened on the radio to the election as it happened presidential elections before their television became a medium. And then when people saw what Kennedy looked like, they were like, oh, yeah, totally voting for him. So, I mean, I'm all for switching it up and changing up the flow and the internet. We're in the, you know, technology is going to be a very consistent.
Did you like the white tunic thing?
What white tunic thing?
From her speech, from her, like, Thursday, from like that.
Oh, what she wore?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I think everything is too Steve Harvey regulation length. You know what I mean? Like, I want you to dress your age, but I want you to be able to walk comfortably
and look a little less like Grimace.
And less
like a little
Grimace.
Less of that Grimace.
You know what I mean?
Shape.
And it's like this Jesus shroud. Like, she could bring the length up. That's gonna be. I just can't wait for all the attacks on her. Look, I didn't even know Armani made $30,000 jackets.
But do we know? I mean, did Armani give that to her? Did they lend it to her?
Of course they did.
Like, she didn't buy it.
I'm sorry.
What she wears? Is she gonna be able to figure shit out when she gets there and not just?
I have no problem with
self-tanner all over.
They're like, oh, she gave a speech about poverty while wearing a $12,000 coat. Yeah, well, like, presidents have given speeches about feminism wearing a men's suit all the time.
Delete your account, Armani, in their bio.
Margaret, what are you all about this week?
I'm all about pop star. Never stop.
Oh, yeah!
Never Stop, Never Stopping is the full title. And it's Andy Samberg playing Connor for Real. And he is a recording artist who has left his two bros that were part of Style Boys with him. And he's broken out on his own. And he's on his second album in the movie. And he's on tour. And things are going pretty rocky for him. It's just a really loving but incisive critique of the whole pop star phenomenon. I mean, Bieber is definitely the main target in it, but not in a mean-spirited way. Like, the movie does not have, and some people I think will probably complain about this, but it doesn't have real teeth. It doesn't have real, like, it's not out to draw real blood, but it is so affectionate and funny, and the songs that Lonely Island wrote for it are legitimately, like, very good and
bangers.
Clever. I mean, one of the songs is I'm So Humble, and the lyrics are I'm a superstar, and I'm also so humble, number one at the top of the humble list.
We're in some kind of golden age of musical comedy right now. Like, you've got, like, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, you've got a lot of... you know, you've got Lonely Island and that being sort of the only good part of SNL left. does it have... like, does it add production value and take away teeth? Like, I mean, is, like, this part of the Jimmy Fallonization of comedy?
Whoa.
Well, Jimmy Fallon's in it.
Exactly. The reason you can't have teeth at the pop stars they're parodying is that eventually Sandberg will have to host the VMAs with these people.
Yeah, and I think he also really does admire the game that a lot of these pop singers are spinning right now. I mean, yeah. And he has tons of people in it. He has Adam Levine. He has Nas, which is really funny to me because Nas is like this super authentic rapper who comes in there and is all like, I mean, when they sing their hit song, like, I couldn't even think anymore. Like it saved my life. Like, at one point he says, it saved my life. Like, it's so ridiculous and over the top to listen to these people that have all this legit cred talk about this, like, hip-hop boy band.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just... I mean, I think that it's not Spinal Tap. Like, some people wanted it to be Spinal Tap.
Oh,
that's not what it
come
is.
The we should, fuck on.
We should stop comparing. Anytime somebody tries to do a musical, a comedy movie with music in it, stop bringing up Spinal Tap. Spinal Tap is on its own thing.
We got it.
We can move
we
past
it.
Yeah.
If your movie doesn't have Fran Drescher, don't come to the table.
Thank right. you. Thank you.
Right?
Okay. First of all, I would like to apologize to everyone for the fact that they made me put my microphone in this little stand and be super close to my microphone.
Just rip it.
Because I am hunching over really badly. Second of all, we're going to be answering your pop culture advice questions at the end of the show.
Yeah.
So our beloved producer, Christian Duenas, and our other beloved producer, Colin Anderson, have cards if you would like to write down an advice question.
And I give really good advice.
We may answer it eventually. But
really good.
And in conclusion,
I just don't take my own.
This week,
can we get some relationship advice too? Yeah. I just want to.
Quiet. I have to tell what I'm all about.
Okay.
Okay. This is not a good thing to have for Max FunCon because it is a little bit narrow and it is a little bit like gay community-ish, but I don't care. So there is a sitcom on television that you have never watched called The Real O'Neills. It is based on the life of Dan Savage, and it stars a real-life 22-year-old gay kid playing a 16-year-old gay kid. That gay kid did an interview with Vulture where he talked mad shit about gay people. He talked shit at Colton Haynes. He talked shit at Bryan Singer. He talked shit at just about everybody who has danced in and out of the closet and made coy noises without actually coming out. It was... boldly worded. It was a lot, and I fucking loved it. Because we give so much deference and respect to people's journey of uncertainty, as long as it is a quiet journey of uncertainty that doesn't unsettle us. Mm-hmm. Some kid coming out being 22 and saying a little too much and things that he will regret, and the kid immediately retracted all of it because ABC Disney came along and said, you can't say that shit, kid. We pay you a lot of money to make a TV show for us. And so it was, I mean, it's part of the interesting journey of, like, it's kind of kids and social media writ large. It is an exaggerated version of your teenage daughter Snapchatting her boobs. like, a lot of people in the gay community were ready to come for this kid because he wasn't supporting other gay people. But I also think that we need to support him and understand that him being loud at 22 is just as okay as somebody being very, very quiet at 29, like Colton Haynes was. You guys have no idea who Colton Haynes is.
He's on Who Watches
Dimitri
People.
Portnoy knows exactly who he is. Because
what did he say about Bryan Singer, though? Because it was already removed from the Vulture.
Because it was libelous. What he said was untrue. He said Bryan Singer, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it because it would be republication.
Okay.
Dimitri, also, he's a gay attorney like me. Well, but he's a real attorney.
he
is nodding his head that I should not republish. He made...
Did not do things.
What?
Just say he did or did not do things.
Yeah.
That Bryan Singer did or... Yeah. Oh, okay. So Noah Galvin's assertion was that Bryan Singer did or did not... have pool parties with little boys, which is not true. I have been to those pool parties. They sure do have 22-year-olds. They don't have people under the age of consent there. That is a popular misconception about Bryan Singer, and is sort of untrue, and I think kind of homophobic that we sort of criminalize and catastrophize a gay director having a pool party while Brett Ratner is doing all sorts of shit.
Okay.
And we're all just like, that's fun. Did I bring the room down?
No, but can I talk? But can I just
welcome
say
to real talk.
This,
yes, get in on this.
J-Lo did an interview in 1998 for Movie Line. I'm going to bring up J-Lo or Ben Affleck in any of these episodes to just get used to it. She shot at like Winona Ryder, Gwyneth Paltrow. She went in on everyone in that. And that could have been a career ender. She wasn't really speaking mistruths. She was just sort of stating her opinion. I took it as that. I really didn't, when I read it, I mean, I feel like he is, it's refreshing to have somebody talking as much shit as he was.
I'm just tired of, there's the Bull Durham sports thing of you're never supposed to say anything when
right.
you talk to the press. But like, sports, like athlete's job is to hit a ball. Like an actor's job is to entertain me. So
right.
entertain me.
As a member of the press, you want those people.
Exactly.
You want to interview the Noah Galvins of the world
who
fly off the handle just a little bit.
I heard from a friend that he actually set up the interview himself over Twitter with the Vulture writer.
Fabulous.
And ABC had no clue
Perfect.
That it was
Even
happening. Corinne,
even better.
As the only actual celebrity on the panel, what advice do you have for us for making splashy remarks to the press?
I feel for that kid. I mean, who is his friends? Who are his people? Because obviously, he does not have people around him mentoring and guiding him to do that.
Well, I mean,
although he talks about Dan Savage a lot as a mentor. Right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Not as a press. Yeah, you really,
to be a little more careful
really, really need to think that through when you do press at that age.
Well, also, Dan Savage probably isn't the mentor who's going to be most likely to tell you to quiet down,
no.
you know?
Right. You're right.
And more
right.
power to him.
And how many people his age are that are openly gay and comfortably gay are like speaking to the press and actually portraying a gay character?
Well, also, good for his manager to not be one of the like
right.
90% of managers who are like, quiet down. Like, Sean Hayes on Will and Grace
oh,
stayed
God.
In the closet until that show was over because he did not want to. There's a horrified look in the audience, as well there should be, because he
time,
didn't
though.
Want to
Different
hurt his
time.
Career in the long term. Also, we have needlepoint going on in the front row. I love maximum fun.
But it's really, really different to be come out as gay than to like talk shit about a famous director. Do you know what I mean? Like,
say that again.
It's really, really different to come out as gay and be a part of the gay community than to talk shit about a famous director at 22. And that if you have people around you that are supposed to be mentoring you, there is a line there that you should really understand.
I don't think he's angling to pay like, you know, Worship and X-Men or whoever the character is. I don't know the universe.
All right. None of us know the universe. You guys are listening to Pop Rocket, and some of you are also here. We will be right back to talk about summer camp and campy movies after this message from friend of the show, Jonathan Van Ness. You guys, everybody, it's the host of Getting Curious on Maximum Fun, Jonathan Van Ness.
Hello, everyone. So, are you guys having a great time? Yeah. Yes, yes. So, I host Getting Curious on Maximum Fun. It's a great little show. And twice a month, I have an expert in to tell me about something that I'm curious about. This Wednesday, I had one of the scientists from the LIGO study, which confirmed the existence of gravitational waves, which Einstein correctly predicted in 1916. But we didn't have the technology to confirm it until February, honeys. So he taught me about it, and I did a lot of this. But you can hear it on Wednesday. It's going to be so much fun. And we're going to do what's going on in Brazil, what were the first Olympics like. We're going to do, I might do Carly Fiorina, but who cares about her anymore? But you know what? It's going to be fun. And it's just, it's kind of like a potluck of podcasting, because you never know what you're going to get. Could be a casserole. Could be a popcorn. It could be a soda. But it's fierce, and I would love for you guys to come listen. So thanks so much for listening to me.
Jonathan Van Ness. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the Pine View Lodge are...
Margaret Wappler.
Winter Mitchell.
Corin Tucker.
Ricardo Carmona. Yeah, I'm sorry.
And since we were here in such a campy, campy environment, we thought we would talk about pop culture, about camp. Now, we are... Ricky, you're from...
Chicago.
You're from Chicago.
Yes.
Like, we're mostly West Coasters. Like, you're also from Chicago, though. Like, camp is not something we do because we live in nature already. California is beautiful itself. We don't have to go to nearby states that are prettier.
So snobby.
What is everybody's experience with summer camp here? Did anyone go to summer camp?
Camp was not something that I did. I felt like from my personal experience, camp growing up in the 80s, that was a very much a white people thing.
Uh-huh.
The 2 summers when I went to camp, my camp was going to my church. And you would literally, like, play dodgeball all day from, like, 10 to 4 in the church parking lot. We were all, like, broken up into, like, different church, different groups. And we did that for, like, 2 months, 8 weeks. And then we just went back to, like, you know, all right, now we just hang out in front of 7-Eleven. And we do, like, when I would see camp, it would be in movies. That was my
right.
connection to camp.
Corn,
meatballs.
Where are you from?
I'm from Eugene. And...
Which is already camp.
It's already camp, but I really wanted to go to camp when I was younger. We didn't really have the money for that, so I had to become a camp counselor myself.
Oh. Cool.
Which I did, so that I could go to the we called it resident camp, and I loved it.
Margaret or Winter, camp background?
I grew up in the city, so camp was not something that I even like really thought about. I thought it was just like only stuff that people did on movies, in movies. But I went to summer camp, like day camp, and it really only consisted of us going to Golden Gate Park, playing on the roof of this really amazing place called Cameron House in downtown San Francisco, and having a really beautiful 360 view of San Francisco. But it was really just what I would have probably done with my mom and dad anyway, but somebody else other than my mom and dad doing it, taking us around the city and doing urban hiking, like going into abandoned buildings.
I feel like city camp was like school field trips.
We could do it
things like that. Yeah.
Whatever.
Margaret. Anything. Are you middle class enough? Come on.
I went to camp, guys. Yeah. I only went one summer of my life. My aunt and uncle, who are like another set of parents, basically sent me to this really hardcore wilderness camp in upstate New York and crossed over into Canada. And it was the kind of camp where you had to wear like a 40-pound pack on your back. And I was... in seventh grade.
Were you guys mules taking things over the border?
We might have been. I really don't know. But like, it was hardcore. But I did have my first French kiss there.
Oh.
And it basically came about because I was brushing my hair upside down, as you do when you're a junior high girl and you want to make it fuller. So you flip it back. And he looked at me and he said, "You look like a beautiful lion." And I was... I was just like, honey, you know? And then later that night, there was a little truth and dare that went down.
Woo!
And we kissed in the truth or dare.
I mean, camp is this sort of like concentration of adolescent sexuality that only really comes out in like sex comedies or horror films.
Right, right.
But what are people's favorite representations of summer camp?
In movies, for me, it was Meatballs.
Oh, wait, why?
Yeah.
Because it was. I think the other thing that camp movies have is it's about one kid who doesn't belong. He didn't belong in the city, so he goes to the camp. He doesn't belong with a majority, like the popular camp members, until he finds his group or the lead counselor, who's like, "Oh, don't worry, kid, you're normal. You'll be fine." And Meatballs was that dorky ass kid. Who couldn't really like figure out how to be friends with anybody. And I always felt when I was a kid, I'm a dorky motherfucker who doesn't know how to get along with anybody. But I wanted to be funny. And lo and behold, he meets Bill Murray. And Bill Murray's the funniest motherfucker you've seen.
Yeah.
The thing about the Meatballs, he's very like man comedy and alienating. It does not feel like...
It's also been at least 20 years since I've seen Meatballs.
Yeah. Like,
30 for me.
It might not. I don't know if it holds up. I'm going just off of memories here.
For me, it is like, and it's not a sort of conventional camp representation, but like Dirty Dancing is the camp I love. Mostly just because it is an important movie about reproductive rights.
True that.
But like, I do think that it was like that it was like Kellerman's with a lodge, kind of like this, and it was a little bit more upscale, and there was a lobby. And it was a girl protagonist and there was dancing. I don't need to explain to you why that is my favorite camp movie.
This is Corin, and my favorite movie was the original Parent Trap.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Great choice. Let's pull that apart. Let's pull at this. Talk about it.
So I felt like I wanted to live inside that movie when they, you know, it's when they go to camp. The thing about camp, the other thing about camp is that it's, you can reinvent yourself, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So these two girls go from these families that are split apart. They don't even realize that when they go there because they're, if you don't even see in the movie, but they're identical twins, but they don't know it. So they get there and yeah. And it's just, you know, part of camp is that they get to reinvent themselves and they also discover a new family. Which is what camp at its best is about as well.
Like that movie really got at the way that like summer camp gives children agency in a way that I never experienced, that like you kind of are your own adult for most purposes. And like that was really exciting. And there's also an interesting message about these two girls hating each other and having mean girl groups that go at each other. And that like the answer to that is just get along and form a plot against someone else. That seems really, really liberating. Also, I'm going to say, Brian Keith's home in that is, to me, like the paradigm of what a California ranch-style home should be.
I love that house. I know every inch of it in my mind. When they come down the stairs and they do the act, it's just like every part of it is gorgeous.
All right, Corin, are you familiar with the film Auntie Mame?
I'm not.
First of all, get off my podcast. No. Okay. Auntie Mame also has a like terrible, waspy, awful girl, like awful woman in it. And when I realized that it is played by the same actress who plays the terrible, awful, waspy woman who is dating Brian Keith in The Parent Trap, I plotzed. Like, I had nothing left. That was a digression. Margaret, talk to us about, we can't just keep going down the line like this. It's too linear. Margaret, favorite representation of camp?
I had a hard time picking. I have Wet Hot American Summer. And I have Moonrise Kingdom. They're both really good, right? I mean, I'll say this about Moonrise Kingdom is that I've seen it more recently, and so it's a little more fresh in my mind. But I also think it's Wes Anderson at his best. Wes Anderson can like just get on my nerves and over art direct things, and this is a case where his art direction fits perfectly with the mode. And I love the fact that the two kids basically run off and escape, because that is the fantasy when you're at camp, that you can basically like leave whatever world you are in behind and run off with your lover or have some completely transformative experience. And I do think there is something about camp being in wilderness in particular that makes a person be able to shift their whole identity. They're not at school anymore. They're not at home. They are literally in the wild. So they can do whatever they want. And the two kids that are in Moonrise Kingdom are so, I mean, they're both great actors and they're so overly mature in that way that like 12-year-old kids can be. And that camp does welcome into you. Like you get back from camp and you're like, I'm different, guys. I'm totally different.
I thought I was going to hate that movie so hard because young love movies are so deeply heteronormative. And it really is like, it just kind of makes me mad always. Any movie where 13-year-olds get to kiss each other and it doesn't make anyone's mom cry. But I love that movie so much. It was really sweet.
Me.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sleepaway Camp.
Yes.
And Troop Beverly Hills.
Let's take this in two parts.
Okay.
Talk to us about camp and horror, Winter Mitchell.
You know, listen, I grew up in the city. So to be out in the woods and have someone pursuing you to cut your head off because you're fucking is so wrong. And it's just so messed up. Now, the thing about the movies is that you know, I've always been, I'm a huge horror movie fan. I love horror movies. And I always thought it's just so fun to be running for your life and not knowing what to do. And I could never, I was always like, what's my strategy going to be? If this happened to me, what would be my strategy? Like, what would I do? And obviously I'm smarter than anybody that wrote that shit. But I mean, I really, really love the Friday the 13th as a series. I love Sleepaway Camp. I remember the first time I saw it, and I was older when I saw it. I was probably like 18, because it was hard. It's a hard movie to get a hold of if you don't know the right place to go. And
I only know of the movie Sleepaway Camp from Halloween costumes of friends who tell me that it's an amazing movie.
Has anybody who's seen Sleepaway Camp?
Goddamn right, hell yeah.
All right. Tell us the basic plot.
I don't want to tell you.
No?
No, because I don't want to ruin it. She's shaking her head. I'm not going to ruin it.
It builds to this reveal where you're like, okay, all right, that's what we're watching.
It's the most shocking. I don't care what. JR getting shot in the face. Anybody. I don't care what ending has ever happened. It's to this day, more than Janet's titty falling out, I was like, no. So there's that. I love horror and comedy or horror movies set at camps because they hardly ever camp. And then Troop Beverly Hills. Troop Beverly Hills. I love that movie because if I were to go to camp and the way I was upper middle class, I wasn't rich, but I would have thought that's how I would have my approach to camp would have been.
I love Beverly Hills so much. And I feel like there is a way that a slightly trashy movie ages better than something that was like incisive and relevant at the time. It probably is a better movie now than like Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Though I love that movie.
All they were supposed to do was like hike to Lake Hollywood, and they end up at the Polo Lounge because it was so hard. And I was just like, this is why I moved to Los Angeles.
It's the best. It's like the other type of camp as well, where it really is just taking, but also has a charming little message about femininity not being marginalized as part of feminism.
Right.
Like it has this really kind of progressive statement that, hey, we can do things our different way and that's okay.
Right.
And I feel like there is something very like appealing if you are a member of a marginalized group to have somebody say, I'm going to do it my way.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a very inclusive movie. It was one of the first... I mean, Shelley Long has given us so much. Let's just thank her for that. But that movie is one of the first movies that I watched in the summertime. And I was like, God, okay, there's a black girl, there's an Asian girl, there's an Italian girl.
Like, but it was also like the trash era after her, like the movies she left Cheers for had kind of fizzled out. This was like a late 80s, oh God, I'm holding on to shit before the comeback with the Brady Bunch movies. Like,
right.
It was kind of a desperate act at the time.
Yeah. It's an amazing movie.
Lindy West on Jezebel did a definitive ranking of all of the outfits in True Beverly Hills. And you owe it to yourself to go look at them because those fucking capes. And the other thing about camp is that they are sort of a way of approaching subculture for kids before the internet existed, that like a lot of pop culture about camps is about fat camp or Jewish camp or, I mean, who here has seen the movie Camp? It is about a performing arts camp full of just the gayest, weirdest children being 14-year-olds doing Sondheim. And it's delightful. It is an exploration of what it's like when you go from your stupid public school where you're that weird kid to this place where everybody is that weird kid. Does, like, anyone, I don't know, anything to say about that, or should we move along?
Camp movies, they were just always such, I mean, they were like the equivalent of like watching a documentary about like a foreign country, just because I was such a city kid. I was like, people leave the city?
Yeah.
Why the fuck would you leave the city? Why would you leave where they have movie theaters at? Why would you leave where the stores are?
I'm not going to disagree.
But the thing that was the problem is that I grew up in the era of like Adam Walsh. So like every time I felt I was leaving the house, I was like, I'm going to get fucking cut my head cut off.
To both of those points, kind of my favorite pop culture representation of camping is from the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Baisley Frankweiler, where those two like northern New Jersey kids go and live in the Met, because that was Like, it's all of the agency of camp and all of the sophistication of the city. And if I could have been anyone as a 12-year-old boy, it would have been Claudia Kincaid.
Okay.
The protagonist of that book.
Then for me, it would have been My Side of the Mountain. Has anybody ever seen that? Okay.
What is My Side of the Mountain?
My Side of the Goddamn Mountain!
I'd have watched it if it was called that.
That shit is the mob bomb. He literally leaves with his, what was it? Was it a beaver or a raccoon? Raccoon is his homie, and they go live inside of a tree, and they're like figuring out mold and the situation with mold, and they're trying to figure. And he's eating broth. He's on some other. He is on some other shit. And I love the idea that he like was like, I'm gonna go live inside a tree, in the Catskills, and does so. I feel like it's 1967. I think it's a Disney movie. It's a really lovely, touching movie. I want it to be him so bad. Just go live in a tree.
As someone who was nearly raised in a tree, let me say, fuck that. all right, let's stop talking about summer camp and let's talk about camp.
Woo!
Margaret Wappler, what's camp?
Oh my goodness. Camp is a sensibility that Susan Sontag argued in her very amazing essay from 1964. The camp is basically a sensibility, and it's rooted around things being secret, and it's rooted around things being like forbidden and underground. And, you know, basically when we thought about this topic, we thought about the fact that so many things about camp are underground, are secret. Like when you are a kid and you're at camp, the things that happen at camp can be really private and really secret and like this other culture that you experience. So that was part of the link there.
It's really about appreciating something with a double awareness. Like, you know, like what are some of your favorite camp pieces of culture, audience?
Mommy Dearest.
Mommy Dearest. Delightful. Mommy Dearest, like, it's coming at you as an attempted serious documentation of Joan Crawford's life, when really it's an important story about a girl who does not appreciate all of the fine things that are purchased for her. Like, it
oh,
is
beautiful
this,
clothes I buy you, Christina.
It is an attempted in Notes on Camp, Sontag has this great quote from Oscar Wilde, to be natural is a very difficult pose to keep up. It is about that weird relationship between representing like actual life and things being disjointed from it.
Well, she talks about artifice a lot. That
yeah.
Artifice is a major, major factor in what camp is. That it can never be natural or tossed off. It has to be really like style over substance. It always has to be a surface kind of humor over any kind of content.
Corin Tucker, what is camp that you love?
Well, I want to go with A League of Their Own because Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, Gina Davis, Tom Hanks.
Okay.
I mean, that movie is like, I want to live inside it for just a little bit longer.
That's bold. What's the line? Okay. This is interesting
like
and advanced place of starting, but this film is a legit interesting representation of a moment in human history. It is actually emotionally evocative. But what is it about it that makes it camp?
I would say because of the casting, because Madonna's in it.
Because that's never not Madonna. Like,
exactly.
Because the whole time, all the way May, is never not Madonna.
But she rocks that movie, though.
Yes.
It suits her so well.
That's,
and Rosie O'Donnell. And the fact that you get to see them together.
Like, that it is the heart of their romance. That it is what gave us that amazing appearance on the Arsenio Hall show.
Well, Phil, it fits the camp definition purely, too, by being a woman's league. Do you know what I mean? Where that's, like, sort of a secret subculture of baseball right there.
Yeah.
I honestly don't want to finish this podcast and just want to think about your assertion that A League of Their Own is camp.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
Winter, what about you?
I was going to say Serial Mom, but then I was, after she's said A League of Their Own, I was like, let me just expand my vision.
Because let me say is that when you're explaining this to like straight white guys, like you always go with Mommy Dearest, you always go with the easily approachable sort of serial mom. Anything that is John Waters, it is easy to understand that there is disjuncture between what is officially going on and what's going on more subtly underneath. But there are these other things that are richer and more complex.
Fabulous.
Keep going. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, that's okay. I was going to say Teen Witch or The Worst Witch.
Okay.
Has anybody ever seen The Worst Witch?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So Teen Witch, I think, you know, being a young, quirky, nerdy, not ready for male physicality if you're a cis hetero female, I think that you are just looking for anything that makes you unique. And she's sort of, it's sort of like Weird Science, which is also camp, but for a girl. And I love the idea, the notion that she, you know, there's this amulet, that she's weird, that she has this creepy brother, that she goes through all this trouble to make herself desirable for this guy. And really the star of the movie is her best friend, and I think we all know this.
Yeah.
You know, her little love song to her boyfriend in the street is everything. And then Worst Witch with Fairuza Balk and Tim Curry playing what would he be in, like, present time? Voldemort? I don't know. But he's just like, you know, that movie was filled with green screen. It shot really awkwardly, but it's like, you know, it's sort of the same thing.
I mean, one of the lovely things about camp...
very gay, but, like, trying to be straight.
Like, bringing together, like, that artifice and that trashiness with some degree of, like, real emotion is all, like, interesting. It is different from... like, ironic. It's different from So Bad It's Good.
Right.
It is, like, loving it and understanding that it's terrible at the same time.
Right.
I personally will have to go with the TV movie Take My Advice, the Dear Abby and Ann Landers story. And you're probably like, but Guy, who plays our favorite providers of print media advice, Dear Abby and Ann Landers? Because they are, of course, twins. The answer is Wendy Malick and Wendy Malick. And it is, like... this attempted melodrama about their journey that is a melodrama about their journey and is Wendy Malick doing very solid work. But it's never not two Wendy Malicks and a green screen and gigantic wigs. And it's magnificent. Margaret, what about you?
Well, at first I was going to give a very traditional pick, which is unimpeachable, which is Pink Flamingos. Like, can't mess with it, right? Yeah, give it some love. Come on, John Waters. But... inspired by Corin's off-the-wall kind of pick, I thought about Black Swan, which...
Hello!
That's a good call.
Oh, God!
There you go.
I think it has all the characteristics of a camp movie because it is trying to be dark and trying to reinforce this darkness that really is absurd and hilarious. And there are lesbian tropes. There's bad, creepy mommy trope.
Oh,
there's...
God.
You know, split personality girl. There's just so much to it. And it's in the ballet world, which I feel like is inherently a campy world.
Yeah.
Barbara Hershey as Gorgon in that movie. So amazing.
Yeah. Just like fixing her daughter up like she's a little doll.
Look, the masturbation scene is the single most hilarious scene I've ever seen in my
life.
I laughed.
But I think though that like when I saw that movie as like a screener at one of the studios, whichever one it came out from, and there was like half of the people in the audience were cracking up and the other half was just like, this is scary and disturbing.
Firmly cracking
which
up.
I do feel like is another like camp hallmark. Like the people who can see camp like will see it clearly 100% and then other people will just mistake it.
Aronofsky, I'm just immediately called to it being camp.
But there is something so fascinating about the fact that like even with Almodovar, somebody who is like officially giving you what we know is camp, there are still those moments when like in All About My Mother, like the woman is being told that her son is dead in the exact way that she tells people that their son is dead for her job. And it is this terribly ironic moment that is both tragic and hilarious. Movie came out 20 years ago.
Okay,
they've watched it. But there is this, that you can be in the same theater with somebody who is crying and you are laughing at it and that they are both appropriate responses.
Yes.
Delightful. Carmona, camp you love.
Camp that I love. I think if I can say this before camp now, I think it's much more acceptable. Like now, like all the movies that I picked, It's like it's Big Trouble in Little China, Break Into Electric Boogaloo. It's all stuff where it's like, oh man, that movie's so fucking cool.
Well, I challenge you, Ricky Carmona. I challenge you that those are heterosexual male irony. That those are so bad it's good. I'm questioning that you
the
love
last dragon. Dragon.
The last all right. dragon.
All right,
the
last dragon. Dragon. All right, last dragon is a beautiful, beautiful choice.
But they're all movies that when I would have like my summer breaks and you come back from school like, oh man, I saw this movie. What was it? Indiana Jones. And everybody goes, oh yeah, Indiana Jones is fucking great. Or I'd come back and I'd say, oh, I saw this movie. It was great. What was it? Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah, you saw that, you dork. You know, and it's watching it and going, okay, I'm not getting what everything that's going on here, but it's fucking hitting me hard.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then when you present it to somebody else and they go, what the fuck is that? You go, oh, this is even more for me.
So what do you love about Big Trouble in Little China? What's magnificent about
when
it?
When I was watching it, I was like, all right, this is, first of all, the movie, the hero is a fucking idiot. Jack Burton is not the hero in that movie at all. I mean, that was like, hey, we got Kurt Russell. And they will very much tell you this, like, hey, I'm Kurt Russell. I'm going to sell to you that I'm the hero. But he is clearly the idiot in the movie. It's the basis for where the characters from Mortal Kombat came out. It's John Carpenter, who has always been one of those directors who... He gets a light like he's not on Spielberg's level.
No,
but those of us who love him, yes. I will talk about him in the same conversation with Spielberg.
Yep,
I will talk about The Thing being one of my favorite Alien movies, just like Alien is, just like E.T. is, Prince of Darkness, underrated fucking
underrated
movie.
Underrated as fuck.
I don't know that you've won me over. Margaret Wapler.
Here's the other thing about camp. I don't give a fuck if you like it or not anyway.
Exactly.
It's my movie. This isn't one of those like, you don't like it? That's too bad. It's not for you then.
No, I'm saying I don't know that you've necessarily distinguished between like irony and camp. That you
Evil
have
Dead
not
well, in some culture,
that you
Evil
haven't
Dead.
Shown me where the heart is, where the relationship, where the investment
Evil
is.
Can I tell you okay, well, can I speak on your behalf for 12 seconds?
It's not I genuinely love these movies.
Okay.
I mean, it's not. I don't love it because when I watched it and I loved it, I didn't love it because Kurt Russell was in it. I didn't know who Kurt Russell was at the time. I was just like, this is a movie about a guy who is, you know, there's all these karate people around him, and there's this weird spirit tour coming out from this guy, and he shoots electricity, and this girl has these fucking jade eyes, and she's holding onto a sword in the sky at one point, and I'm fucking 11 years old, right. And I'm loving this.
Now you've won me over.
Okay, really fast.
Just a moment. Okay. Are you familiar with a film by the name of Flash Gordon?
Oh my god.
This
motherfucker's gonna ask me that.
I feel like Flash Gordon really is that point that action movie, like it is an action movie that is like full of its own camp and
yes.
empowered by its own camp the entire time.
Yes. I did, but Flash Gordon, when I watch it now, I can't watch it and enjoy it.
Right.
To me, it's such a bad movie when I watch it now. I'm like, no, thank you.
See, he disagrees because he loves Flash Gordon.
Yeah,
I think Kurt Russell is also a camp actor. Like, no matter what he's in, he is camp to
yes.
me. Like, I mean, sort of like Patrick Swayze. Like, yeah. I feel like Patrick Swayze in all things is camp.
I did not in what was it? The Hateful Eight. Too much Kurt Russell camp in
too
that movie.
Too much.
Bone
too
Tomahawk.
Much.
Perfect Kurt Russell camp in that movie.
I would like to say that General Kala saying "Dispatch War Rocket Ajax" in Flash Gordon is one of the greatest moments in film history. And I will not hear you speak a little bit. Winter, I'm sorry I interrupted.
No. I was just going to say that he put Evil Dead 2 in. That's
and
literally
Evil Dead 2, yeah.
Top 5 favorite movies ever. And that, if you've never seen it, that movie is the personification of camp.
It's
inherently camp because it's a remake of the first movie, just good with more money.
Well, yeah, they gave him a bigger budget.
They gave him a bigger budget, so they made the same movie twice and then put more special effects in it and then added a different ending.
It's like El Mariachi and Desperado.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, well, let's try it again with yeah.
Margaret.
And Salma Hayek.
He's not sold.
Susan Sontag says that camp is inherently apolitical, that it cannot be sort of like trying to send a message. In the foreword to The Picture of Dorian Gray, Oscar Wilde says something kind of similar. How do you feel about that?
That's one of the lines in that essay that I disagree with. I feel like camp can have a political import. I mean, in part because camp can be about acting outside the norms. You know, so much of what happens in Pink Flamingos, for instance, if I go back to that classic pick, is Divine acting completely out of the norms. Uh-huh. And so I do feel like that's a political act inherently. And the fact that you have camp at this point being so linked with gay culture, and particularly about sort of like gay pride, like this is a code we understand,
yeah,
which to me feels like another inherently political act. Like, it's not stripped away from all things politics. I mean, she makes this case that, you know, camp can be in part about like decor and things that have no political content, like Tiffany lamps or whatever. And like, that may be true, but I think in a movie, in a performance sense, it is linked with politics.
The dragginess of it, the fact that it is ridiculous, but you are still invested and you love it, is what is so interesting and compelling to me, and is why the choice of... because more subtle camp choices are always more interesting. Because, like, A League of One's Own, and the very fact that its name is a fucking Virginia Wild pun is...
Or Virginia Woolf, yeah.
Virginia Woolf, what did I say?
Wild, but...
Yes. Yeah. Same thing. is a Virginia Woolf pun is, like, sort of the way that it is heightened in a way that you know you're... Like, with camp, you know you're not supposed to like it, but still you love it. All right, Corin, before we go out, give us something else that you know you shouldn't love, but you do.
Oh, my God, the movie Xanadu.
Okay.
That's perfect.
This podcast That's just perfect. Got a little bit longer.
Oh, shit.
Corin, could you tell us about a place that nobody somethinged before?
It's a roller rink where... mythological dreams come true?
Zeus, of course, sends down a muse to inspire great art in a man living in Venice, California. She inspires him to build a roller rink. It's amazing. Like, and the Broadway musical, I'm sorry that I'm recommending so many musicals, but the Broadway musical of Xanadu is one of the best musicals I have ever seen. It's ridiculous and terrible, but it like so leans in to how, what a terrible story that is, but that ELO music.
It's
like
incredible.
Yes, the Olivia Newton-John is just magnificent. And she had, Corin, may I say, she had a little blonde braid in her hair, just like that. And I, as a little boy watching it on television, was just like, that's everything I want to be.
Me too.
Wait, now have you ever seen Apple?
Yes, I have. And
okay.
I don't think it's as...
I love you.
I don't like it as much because I feel like it is leaning into the irony and it's something that is easier to distance and just say, sure. Oh, this is ridiculous. Where Xanadu has those legit good songs and it has like just the legit softness. One of the other amazing things that the Xanadu musical does is integrate the Olivia Newton-John song, Have You Never Been Mellow, which is...
the most boring song. I'm sorry, guy. It's the most boring song.
The best. Colin is mad at us and we have to stop. What were you going to say, Winter?
There are two distinct camps. There's the camp that loves Apple and there's the camp that loves Xanadu.
Yeah, right people and wrong people. You have been you're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back after this. But first, you guys, we have a live promo break from Dan McCoy and Stuart Wellington of the Flop House. Dan and Stuart, Xanadu or the Apple?
Xanadu.
Xanadu. Up.
You guys can do your promo.
Hey, everyone. We're Dan and Stuart from the Flop House, two-thirds of the Flop House. Why is Elliot not here, Stuart?
Well, Dan, he's the head writer for the new Mystery Science Theater 3000, and he's too busy.
Speaking of camp.
I thought you were going to talk about how our wow. This promo is going great. We discovered that Elliot's voice is the least appealing one, so we decided to cut him out for this one. But if you want to listen to... That's right. We're burning a guy's not here. If you want to listen to a show that's about bad movies but is not mean about it, which I think you want to do, listen to The Flop House.
Yeah, and we don't really talk about the movie that much, so you don't have to really watch it or anything. And then, yeah, whatever. We've been doing it a while, so we have a bunch of episodes.
So, if you want to show with a bunch of episodes, listen to the Flophouse.
Dennis Stewart, everybody. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me, here at the Arrowhead Something Lodge in Lake Arrowhead, California, are...
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
Corin Tucker.
Ricky Carmona.
And you guys, we have some pop culture advice questions from the audience. First question. What's the best and worst song for a wedding reception, in parentheses, gay? Who gave us this question? Dimitri, am I invited to your wedding?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead with this question.
Are we going to do this like game show speed round, like lightning round?
All right. Yes, let's do it relatively quickly. No, you can explain. You can explain. What do you think are the best songs for a gay wedding?
I know the worst.
What's the worst?
The Macklemore song.
Oh!
Oh, you guys are too mean to him.
I mean, it's just two on the nose is really what I'm saying.
I think your song is a great option because the work that Elton John went to not have gendered pronouns in that song must be respected for always. And all the single ladies. For obvious reasons. To celebrate your sisters from before who were unable to get married. And had a good time anyway when they weren't in jail.
I was going to say, and I hope I'm not wrong in saying this, but weddings just feel like such a, this is for the bride. This is a female event that anytime I hear Beyonce at a wedding and I see women lose their fucking minds, I'm like, this is the best. I love this. This is so great. I just think Beyonce should always be played at a wedding.
Yeah, like DJs who don't understand that gay guys and women want to dance and you should play songs for us to dance and not respectable music for straight guys to have conversations to.
No.
And I'm going to say worst song, Shut Up and Dance, because it is the most heteronormative song. A friend of mine once described it as the romance between the male and female symbols from bathrooms.
Can I admit how ignorant I am? I don't know what you mean when you say heteronormative.
Oh, I mean, it presumes a world where everybody is straight and boys like girls and girls like boys.
Got you. Okay.
Carmona, I don't know if you know this after hosting a podcast with a lesbian couple who are now married for years, but not
Whoa,
all
they
boys.
Got
married? All right. Corin, any thoughts on gay wedding music?
Kiss by Prince?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. All right. What TV show should I watch with a date? Who asked this question? Who did? Raise your hand. All right. What's your name?
Chris.
We're answering this for Chris. Thoughts? TV show to watch with a date. I am going to say Mr. Robot because it is moody and complex. The plot isn't actually that hard to follow. And Rami Malek would get anyone in the mood.
I'm going to say Chop Junior.
Okay. Why?
I'm dating a toddler and he loves it.
No, come on. Why?
That's why. I'm dating a toddler and he's 25, but he loves Chop Junior and I found like it's calming. We don't really disagree or argue over it. We have certain positions on the preparation and the presentation of a plate, but overall, we generally agree.
Basic cable reality is a nice thing to half watch. Yeah. Like, it's something you can go in and out of.
Exactly.
Anyone else?
I would say Battlestar Galactica.
Woo!
I like your choice, but explain it.
Again, I'm thinking... when I was in a relationship, I was watching it. I was like, I love this show because I can watch shit blow up, and I love the special effects. And my girl at the time was like, who the fuck is this Starbucks person? I love Starbucks. And I was like, oh, this is cool to be watching a show where it's not just like, that's Norm, and that's Sam Malone, and here's just more guys I'm picking out for you to watch, and let's just watch shows about guys. That was one of the first, this is like a good balance.
This was 1982? Nice.
No.
No, when I was
Winter stop.
I'm 87 years old.
I'm afraid of house
music.
Next question.
Sorry.
Next question. I'm afraid of house music. What should I fuck with first? Love Jesse. This is not a question for me. This is not a question for Margaret.
I would say fuck with some Earth People. I would say fuck with some Fast Eddie. I would say fuck with some... go on Spotify and just go to, like, what's the label? The tracks label. T-R-A-X-X. Or I'm sorry, T-R-A-X. And just go through just great between 1987 and about 1994 Chicago house music, because it was really just one of those great moments where, like, the scene is exploding and everybody's just trying out all this new shit. House music isn't all what they play, what you think they're playing, that American Eagle or that fucking garbage. Please stop believing that myth.
What
that,
about
that
Dylan
is
Francis?
See, I don't even know who Dylan Francis is.
He's all right. Good.
How Dimitri from Paris as well. He's great.
All right, next question. How do I better convince my reluctant friends to be more willing to try new shows / movies? I believe he is too anxious about trying new media. Should I even bother or should I persevere? Thanks, Tim. I think you should. It is your job to pimp out culture on other people so you yes. have stuff to talk to about. There's nothing more vexing than watching something really good or really bad and then having no one to talk to about it. It's why I love these people. Margaret and Winter watched the terrible Stonewall movie just so I could complain about it to them. And it's wonderful.
That's what the love gun is. Firmly pressed to my temple.
And I think the best strategy, my joke strategy is just the fact that, like, Christmas parties are only 5 months away, you guys. People are going to make you talk about TV shows. People are going to want to talk about OJ. People are going to want to talk about The Wire still. And you have to be ready for that. Corin, how do you show people new media? How do you get them excited about it?
You can really bribe with a snack, I found. Yeah, make nachos.
Uh-huh.
And then you can say, like, and we can watch this new show that I found on Netflix.
Do you, like, you have two kids. Like, yeah. what pieces of culture have you, like, brought to them and been like, all right, guys, get ready for this?
I think my son and I started watching Sherlock together.
Oh, nice.
And we were just like, this is the most amazing show, and we'd binge watch it together.
Margaret, strategy for pimping off media?
Well, my husband can sometimes be prickly about what he wants to watch. And so we have a very strict one for me, one for you kind of policy. Like, I wanted him to watch Catastrophe with me, and he wasn't that into it at first. And so I said, let's watch Catastrophe, and then we can watch Adventure Time, because he likes Adventure Time, and so do I. So I find that if you have a little... compromise built into it, that's one way to do it. But I also just thought about Catastrophe in response to Chris's question, is that I think Catastrophe is a good thing to watch on a date because it brings up so many issues about, like, compatibility and men and women in relationships, assuming you're in a hetero one, and so forth. And so I think that is actually a great conversation starter for a date.
If you want to learn about gay people in relationships, you just have to watch Top Chef. It's our only option. Also, that is Karen Thompson's theory, not mine. All right. So this is an unvetted question that was handed directly to me. I may get in trouble for this. But how bad is it to support by purchasing garbage or controversial media just because I'm curious and kind of want to see the train wreck? I think that that's a fascinating question that we all kind of have to face of, like, you want to be able to watch something and be informed about it, but if it's a movie... like, do you want to support it? Thoughts?
Wait. I
don't supporting
understand.
Media by purchasing it if it's something you, like, don't approve of. Like,
oh,
I really think you should think about what you spend your money on.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Sometimes will pay for one movie and go see another movie because I want to support the movie that I am paying for.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work at, like, a place that has assigned seating and stuff, but sometimes you can get away with it, and that's what I do.
I've been in this position a lot because I've needed to see things for work and to write about something, and it's not always what I want to pay money for or pay money from that's coming from my employer, but I do it. And I think the way to reconcile that is to really have a good conversation with yourself and people around you about what is problematic about that movie or that piece of pop culture, because I think when you just take it in blindly and numbly, that's an irresponsible act in a way. And if you can talk about it and think about it and really grapple with what are the issues in it, then you are doing some kind of service for the world and thinking about those issues.
All right, you guys, we've done a pretty terrible job of making this interactive, but it was our first live Pop Rocket. But before we go, we do have a brief trivia game. I was wondering if I could get some people to volunteer as tribute. We need two. I'll take you with the interesting facial expression and you in the green shirts. All right. Then, are there any comics left here? Do we have a celebrity competitor against them? All right. I only said Amy, but it's all right. You can stay up here. All right. Come on. All right, for an area, move to my left, please. For an area to have appropriate trivia about on this episode where we talked about summer camp and camp as a sensibility, I thought the most reasonable option was movies about the Holocaust, or comedies about the Holocaust. I hold in my hand 7 questions about Holocaust comedies. Whoa. If you know the answer, raise your hand. I will call on you and then answer. Do not answer before or you will receive no points. Do we all understand? Yes. Let's meet our competitors. Sir, what's your name?
Patrick.
Patrick, talk into the microphone. Patrick, what do you do for a living?
I'm a programmer.
Congratulations, Patrick. Lovely. Oh, where are you from?
Omaha.
Patrick from Omaha, everybody. Yay. Rachel, what's your name?
Rachel.
Rachel, what do you do for a living?
I work at a grocery store.
Rachel, where are you from?
Eugene.
Rachel from Eugene, everybody. Should she be disqualified because she's from Corin's hometown and she probably gave her the answers?
No, should she be disqualified? She's a moderator of our Facebook group.
Woo! Rachel's got a leg up.
Rachel, we love you.
She's got a leg up.
And Amy, what is your name?
I am Amy.
Amy, where are you from?
San Jose, California.
Woo!
Amy, what do you do for a living?
I make fruit and vegetable pillows.
Fabulous.
I mean, fabulous. Embroidery girl, you got competition, okay? All right. Competitors, are you ready? Audience, are you ready? Tell me your name again. Patrick. All right, let's do this. Question one. This 1997 film told the story of Guido Orefice, a Jewish-Italian bookstore owner who... Rachel Rosing.
Life is beautiful.
Life is beautiful.
Good. Interesting.
Question two. We have Rachel with 1 point. Patrick and Amy.
Can
not,
I keep scoring?
Not on the board yet, please. Question two. This 1999 film tells the story of an intern Polish shopkeeper played by Robin. Amy. Amy. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Rachel for the steal.
Jacob the Liar.
Amy, Rachel, you're running away with this. I'm proud that you're taking back model minority for the Jews, but I wanted to feel competitive. Question three. 7 Beauties, a 1975 film by Lena Wertmüller, tells the story of a man who stays alive in World War II prison camps by seducing ladies. What distinction did it earn at the 1977 Academy Awards?
Ooh.
If anyone in the audience knows, ooh, you can steal and replace one of our competitors on stage. All right, sir in the back.
Best Foreign?
Sorry, no.
Ooh. Makeup?
Sorry, no. Anyone else?
Best Original Song.
First film to have a female Best Director nominee. Never had one before that. Ooh. Didn't have one again until Jane Campion in 1993.
For the pianer.
So lean in. All right. Question four. The Day the Clown Died is a 1972 film no one has ever seen because its writer, director, and star owns the only copy. Who made this piece of shit about a clown in the Holocaust? Rachel.
Is it Jerry Lewis?
3 points! Mathematically impossible for anyone else to win, but we go through all the way if we learned anything from the past month. Question 5. What future game show host started his career in a fun sitcom about a Nazi prison camp that ran from 1965 to 71?
Oh.
Sir?
Richard Dawson.
Richard, who would you like to replace, Patrick or Amy? All right.
Sorry, Patrick.
Thank you for playing, Patrick.
Thank you for playing, Patrick.
Sir, what's your name?
Andy.
Andy, where are you from?
Washington, D.C.
Andy, what do you do for a living?
I'm a health policy analyst.
Andy from D.C., everybody.
Chocolate City.
That was for you.
Then do it.
Question 6, hands on buzzers. Camp Comedy is an essay about Holocaust comedies by everyone's favorite Slovene cultural critic you may know from A Pervert's Guide to Ideology or Zizek. Name him. You got the answer?
Is it Zizek?
Who would you like to replace? I'm gonna say you're replacing Amy. I'm
the
sorry.
Name was
Amy.
In the question.
Thank you for playing.
Good answer. Well done.
What is your name?
Brian.
Brian, what do you do for a living?
I am a learning scientist.
And where are you from?
Lansing, Michigan.
Brian. Yay! From Michigan, everybody. Christian, let's have the prize ready. Where's Christian? Christian, do you have the prize?
Yeah.
All right. I'm wiping the board clean for the final question, everybody. It is anybody's game. If she wants to win it, she's going to fucking win it. That's Rachel Rosings right there, okay?
Yeah. All right, if anyone can do it, she can do it.
Question 7. According to Rosa the Maid in Troop Beverly Hills, do we need patches? Rachel?
No.
Can you be more specific?
No, we don't need no stinking patches.
Ladies and gentlemen... Your winner and the recipient of my album and some 1970s gay porn, Rachel Rosen.
That's what's up. Hell of a game, y'all.
You have been listening to Pop Rocket Live at Max FunCon, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winner Mitchell, Morgan Wappler, Ricky Carmona, and your very special guest, Corin Tucker. We post show notes every week at MaximumFun.org, and you can also find links to the episode in the description of the podcast. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Normally, you guys don't have to see how the sausage is made. You just turn off the podcast, but we have to do this every time. If you've got an opinion you want to share about this week's topics, you can join the conversation on our Facebook group, moderated by who? That bitch. Or you can tweet at us. We are at Pop Rocket. Thanks to Nick White for our recording help, and thanks to our producers, the very proud Christian Duenas and Colin Anderson, who is here. Thanks so much, everybody.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.